Welcome to the Ohana Life Podcast, where we try to bring to you people in the health and wellness fields to help you along your journey. In this episode, I was able to speak with Donna Imgrund. She has been a nurse for quite a while and was able to tell us some ways to help people deal with loss and grieving, and also how we can keep ourselves protected and strong to be able to be there for people who need us. She is such a wonderful human being, and it was probably the most emotional and beautiful podcast that we've had thus far. So I thank her for her time, and I do hope that all of you will get something out of this. It's such a beautiful human way of connecting and just being able to find those commonalities of being human along this path. So maybe settle in and really just find the emotional space for this episode today. Thank you so much. I love you all. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Lisa.
So you may be one of my favorite people ever.
Oh, thank you.
And I wanted to have you here today to talk about a pretty difficult topic. So it seems like this year has brought to surface a lot of loss of like kids not having graduations, loss of kids not having school dances, loss of people losing out on vacations that maybe they had planned, or gatherings that they wanted, or even visiting the elderly. And then there's like the deeper losses that have happened. I personally think that some of the losses of like vacations and things like that have really allowed us to have more ability to enjoy like where we live and where we are. But the other losses of pets, relatives, you know, all these family members, friends, family members, a lot of elderly, you know, I took care of this gentleman, Dave, and I lost him this year. So it's just like losses everywhere. And I'm noticing that on social media, I'm having to say, I'm sorry for your loss every day for something, a pet, a relative, a cousin of people's. So you worked in a field that I'll have you introduce yourself in a moment that helps this process. And you told me about some of the ways that you helped people through this. And so I thought maybe you would be a good person to help talk us through maybe the best ways to manage loss and help others that may be going through that. So with that, is there any way that you can maybe tell people a little bit about your background and your history?
Oh, sure. So I'm a nurse. And for 23 years, I worked at Concord Hospital, and I worked on the med-surg oncology floor. I think I was very fortunate enough that I was placed on that floor because I learned a lot, and that really was a good match for me. And then after my 23 years there, I went over to the VNA, where I worked in the role of an educator, but I really got to see a different side of how people go into people's homes and really connect with them. The agency that I work for also has a really good hospice program, so I was able to work with them as well. So that's really briefly my history in a few little sentences.
Okay, great. That's a lot of care, and those are some difficult places to be for sure. So I didn't know that the VNA part you had been a part of was hospice care.
Yeah.
Okay. And then little known fact for people, you took the Ohana training several years back, and that's how I heard about these stories of how you cared for people. And to me, it was just so touching that you just kind of innately knew some ways to manage the tough times. So Maybe can you start by maybe telling us some ways to start to connect to people? I think with the whole, with COVID, we're disconnecting from people actually in a way that like the elderly are passing without being able to see somebody's face or hold like skin on skin hand contact. So we're losing that connection, but how can we bring some of that back maybe?
Sure. Yeah. I think what I'm kind of feeling is that with this pandemic where we've all lost, like all of us have lost routines and what we count on every year, like you had mentioned graduations. I mean, all of those things that we just count on as the passing of time, we've lost all of that. So we as a community have a collective grieving and it just feels really heavy. You can feel it when you go into the grocery store and everyone is trying to figure out this new way of how do you even shop now? I think people are getting more, you know, into the routine of, yes, we're all wearing face masks and yes, the aisles are one way. But it's this collective grieving that we're doing together because we've lost all of our norms. We've had weddings that we were scheduled to go to that got canceled. So, you know, even these normal things that we do during the summer have kind of disappeared. And it weighs heavy on all of us. I think that the elderly are particularly susceptible because they're alone. And a lot of them are very afraid to go out and venture out because they don't want to get ill, which is really, it's helpful because we don't want to expose them. But it's hard when you're trying to reach out and make sure that they know that we're still there and we still care about them. I think that Skype and Zoom have been helpful, but it's really hard when you have a loved one that's in a nursing facility and the only way that you really get to connect is just to see their face. And sometimes people who are in a nursing home don't understand what they're looking at on a phone or on an iPad. And really the nurses and the LNAs that are working in the facility have become our surrogates to provide that touch to them. And that's really hard for the relatives because they can't go in and they can't connect physically anymore. I think when, for people who have relatives in a nursing home, they need some comfort too. And I think that's where we can reach out to them to offer them support. And I think sometimes just connecting with people and letting them just say their story can be very powerful for them. So they can kind of just say, this is really hard. This is what I'm going through. And just being able to say it without feeling like they're being judged and what they're saying may not be correct, because whatever they're feeling at that moment is correct. And being able to share that with somebody else, I think, is very, very powerful.
So being a good listener and not feeling like you have to respond or make a response to what they're saying or fix.
Correct. What's going on. Yeah, I think I learned that. I had a coworker that I worked with who lost both of her children tragically at the same time. And I lived close to her. So I was kind of, you know, given the task to kind of bring, people would write cards to her and have little gifts for her. And I would bring them out to her home. And people at work said, how can you do that? What do you say to her? And I really didn't say a whole lot. I was just there. I was present with her and I let her kind of lead where she wanted that conversation to go. And it changed every time, like every meeting I had with her. One time I went to visit with her, she wanted to watch videos of her children. And another time I visited her, she wanted to go through cards people were mailing her. then there was another time I went and I probably was there for 15 minutes and she was like, okay, I'm done today. And I didn't take it personal. I just wanted to let her know that I was thinking of her and the people at work were thinking of her. And what I did was I set up, whenever I left, I would set up what day I was coming the next week. And I think that's important too, because sometimes if you reach out initially, somebody might not be ready, but if you kind of put in and say, hey, I'm going to call you again next Tuesday. And it lets them know that you're just going to keep checking in with them.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah. Even if it's, it might not be weekly, it might be whatever works, you know, with you and their schedule. I think they'll know that, okay, I can count on this person to be able to kind of reconnect again.
So I guess that's a good point. They count on you because they've already had loss.
Right.
So they don't know what's dependable in life anymore.
Yep. There's lots of little things you can do too with, I know I had a friend who got a pretty devastating diagnosis. And one thing I did with her this summer was I was out in my garden and I saw this little flower, and it just, every time I passed by it, I thought of my friend. And finally I was like, oh, I'm going to send my friend this flower. So I went inside, I picked the flower and I pressed it in between books, you know, between wax paper when you were kids and you would do that. I pressed that, put it in a little card and just said, hey, I'm just thinking of you, and sent it to her. So those little kind of things you can do just to let people know that, oh, I do have somebody that's thinking of me. Because I think at that time she wasn't really ready to have a lot of communication outside her family unit. But it was a way that I could just say, yep, hey, I'm here and I'm thinking of you. So I'm going to keep kind of reaching out in other ways than maybe not a phone call or a text message or an email, where sometimes for that other person, it might take a lot of energy to even respond in a way. But I was just letting them know, hey, I'm still here. And I'll still be here.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point, Donna, because right now we can't visit probably as much as we could, especially if like your friend is sick and the worry of what you may bring in there. And so our other opportunities are texting, social media, email. But I do feel like more and more people, I know for the studio, I received through the meat of the COVID time between March and June, so many handwritten notes that came in the mail. And I thought, I love that this part is coming back. The generosity of someone's time to sit, grab a pen, find the perfect, you know, writing implement and the paper that they want for that person, and maybe a picture that's on a card. But yeah, that pressing of the flower is such a good idea, because every time you saw that flower, you thought of her. So why not? Why not take that kind of intuition and run with it? So when you would visit the friend who lost her children, was there a specific amount of time that you stayed? I know the one for 15 minutes was shorter, but is there an amount of time that maybe gets to be too much or too overwhelming?
So what I did with her was I made sure that I had at least 4 hours that were free. So that for me, it was a time when my kids were both in school. So I picked a time that they were in school and I didn't need to worry about, you know, rushing home to get to them. So I set aside a block of 4 hours to be free for her. Usually the visits were about 90 minutes to 2 hours. But I will say what I learned from her, because the more that I kept visiting her, the more open she would become with her feelings and what were going on. And the one thing I remember distinctly, which I think will be helpful for people who are trying to reach out to somebody and they don't know what to say. When I first went to see her after this event happened, I was with a couple other people, and I remember distinctively somebody said to her, well, your kids are in a better place now. And it was probably a few weeks after, when I was alone with her, that she said, I hated hearing people tell me my kids were in a better place, or I will see them again, or, you know, some type of cliche remark. She said, I did not want to hear those things. And now I know the people who are saying them,
they mean well.
They just didn't know what to say.
Right.
So they said the things that we hear, you know, like whether on television or we've heard it growing up. And I think that kind of taught me that it's okay to, number one, not say anything, but it's also okay to say, I don't know what to say right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that for her, she was okay with somebody saying, I don't really know what to say to you. And sometimes she would respond back and say, I don't know either. And that's okay. This was a tragedy that most people don't deal with in their lifetime. And there wasn't really words to say.
And it's the human experience. Yeah. I mean, it's both of you going through that, because it's like birth. You know, the husband is never going to know what the wife or woman is going through. And the woman is never going to know, well, they may, if they have another friend giving birth or a child that's giving birth where they get to witness it, but they still had the experience of what it was like to go through it.
Right.
So you'll never know. And so this is the same thing. It's this human experience where you are so, you feel so sad and hurt for these people, and you want to help, but you have no idea how. And so you're being guided each way, both yep. of you.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful experience, and it's part of being human. And it's not always about the joy. It's about trying to live through life and doing it together and doing it as a community. And when you said that we're all collectively grieving, I mean, that is the most accurate description of 2020, is there is this collective grieving, and we still have to move through it, and we have to continuously like change what we're doing and figure out what we're doing, and figuring out with other people where there's no touch, very little communication, not even communication through reading a face, you know, reading all of the expressions of a face either. So that's been really hard. So I do love that you've had this experience beforehand for, you know, 30 years or so that you can give us some inspiration on what to do. And I think you had said with this friend, like the 15-minute day, you know, they're going to have a bevy of emotions as well too, right? And not to take it personally, and to know that some days they may be great and some days they may be angry. And that we just have to be there no matter what.
I think the other important thing too is to, when you're with somebody and they start talking about whatever the situation is that they're struggling with, is not to feel like you have to think about what your response is going to be. Because once your brain starts trying to figure out what you're going to respond as, you kind of stop that empathetic listening. And it's okay for pauses. It's okay. Even if their story that they're telling you doesn't really make sense, like the details are missing, or they're not in chronological order, or they're just kind of getting their story out, just let them do that. And when you keep reconnecting with them, then you can get more of those details, because in that moment when they're just sharing that something has happened to them, just let them get that out without any, you know, questions or without any corrections, like saying, oh no, that was last Tuesday. That at that point it doesn't really matter. They just need to kind of say what they have to say, and then you can kind of move on from there once they get that, whatever it is that they've been holding inside too. And then they can talk about it later.
So our role is to help them process by just being an empathetic listener.
Yeah.
Just listening. Yeah. So would you say that, well, loss is a traumatic experience. And so there's trauma right from the get-go of what's going on, depending on how it was handled and what happened. And so we have a role, this little bit of role as a friend or a relative, as a caretaker, to help them get past that trauma in a more positive way.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. There's Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote a theory about.
I've read her books.
Yes. And we all go, it's interesting if you kind of read her stages, we all kind of go through that. So the first one's denial. The next one's anger. The next stage is bargaining. Then you have depression. Then you have acceptance. So, you know, you can go through it even if you, like, for example, sometimes if I don't practice my piano and I have my piano lesson coming up, I go through all five stages probably really quickly, like, oh, I'm going to be fine. And then I can't believe that I didn't practice enough to, oh, maybe my teacher will cut my lesson short, you know, the bargaining part, to then just feeling like, oh, I really just messed this up. And then to acceptance, like, okay, like we all go through it, like even for little things.
So these are stages not before death. These are stages for trauma?
For grieving. So
for grieving. Okay.
Yep, for grieving. So we're all kind of in some phase of that right now where we all do it.
Yeah. You know. I'm thinking the acceptance part is going to happen more in after 2020 is done. Yes. I think so. You know, we always have to look back on things and see what the lessons were and where we were and where what we've become based on those experiences. You know, I would say that lesson of it's better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all. You know, to have love for somebody or something, whether even this was a friend that wasn't like your best friend, wasn't a family member, but you loved her enough to be caring like that, you know, you're a better person too by having gone through that with her. Have there been other experiences that maybe you would want to share of how you handled the situations?
Sure. I wanted to bring up, we have our niece actually just had an accident in her kitchen where there was a fire. And she sustained some burns. She's absolutely fine now. We did connect with her over Zoom. But she made a comment that I really wanted to bring forward in our conversation. She said, we were talking about, you know, how is she doing? And she kind of shared the whole experience with us again. And she said one of her friends said to her, can we joke about this now? Is it okay to use some humor? And she was like, yes, I'm ready for some humor. So I thought that what her friend did was really very powerful. Her friend asked her, can we start, you know, using some humor to kind of get through this situation? Are you at a point where we can do that? And her name is Katie. And Katie's like, yep, I'm ready for humor now. Like, I've gotten through this tough part. We can kind of start making some, you know, some light of the situation. And I thought, wow, that was really great that friend did that, just to ask, where are you at? Is it okay to kind of shift a little bit from being really serious to, you know, making a little bit light of the situation? And I was like, yep, that's perfect. Ask the person where they're at too, so that you guys can be on the same page and kind of move forward and bring the conversation into a different light.
Well, that's what I love about you, Donna, because you learned even from that experience that you weren't even necessarily involved in 100%.
Right.
So you took that and said, how can I use this information for the future of myself, my children, right? Yeah. And anyone else that I know and can learn from this. That's important too, is it wasn't just words and you just let them kind of go in one ear out the other. You really thought about it and said, wow, this is useful. I store this away for later. Can you, I don't know if you want to share this story, but of that gentleman, maybe one of your first patients that passed away, this story just embodies like who you are and I want the world to know it. So.
Sure. Yeah. This happened when I was 24 years old. So very, very young. And he was 26 and he had AIDS and I worked the night shift. So I ended up working three nights in a row and he was assigned to me three nights in a row.
And how lucky was he to have that? That's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
The nurse that I got report from, one before my night shift said that he was on the phone with a friend and he said, I'll make it. So this was in November, early November. And he told his relative he was on the phone with, he said, yep, I'll make it through these holidays, but I'm not going to be here the following year's holidays. And he was up walking around on the first night that I had him. Second night I had him, he really declined. He was having a harder time breathing. He wasn't moving around so much and really wasn't feeling very well. The third night that I took care of him, he really was just in bed and he rang his bell and he said he felt extremely nauseous and he needed to go to the bathroom. So I said to him, I said, why don't I go get your medication for your nausea? I'll come back. And then once I give that to you, I'll help you to the bathroom. And he agreed. So I went and I got his medication, went back in the room and he was taking his last breath. I mean, this is how very quick this was for him. So he was by himself. I mean, it happened so rapidly that, you know, we didn't have time to call family to come in and we didn't know that it was going to happen this quick. I sat down next to him and I held his hand and I just said very quietly, I'm just going to stay here. I'm just going to stay here with you. And I'm right here. And I just sat there until he took his last breath. And I have to say that this was the only time I felt this was after his last breath happened. And I just probably sat next to him for maybe another 30 seconds quietly. I really could feel that he was in the room and that he knew he didn't die by himself. I mean, I felt that was just a very heavy feeling that I felt. And I never forgot that. I ended up talking to his mom shortly after, and it was tough. He was 26 years old and this was in the early 90s. So the medication for AIDS wasn't like it is today. It was, people did die from AIDS. But I think that kind of shaped how I see human connection. Because I think sometimes just that quiet presence can mean more to people than sometimes the chattering or the telling someone what to do, or you need to do this or you need to do that. Yeah, I've never forgotten that experience. I mean, I don't think I ever will forget that experience because that really did shape how I kind of viewed my career as a nurse and how I view the interconnectivity of people. And I think even for strangers, reaching out to strangers can be so powerful.
I don't think we're strangers to begin with, yeah. Right? We're, yeah. We're humans. I can't do that. Whenever you tell that story, I cry every time. I think it's impactful for me because you really learned from it and helped now 30 years of helping people because of that one pivotal moment. I can't not cry. Sorry. But you were 24. I mean, that's so young. And to have someone pass away in front of you that is basically the same age is huge. I mean, that's life altering, life changing. And, you know, I just, whenever you told that story to me, I was like, come on. That's so beautiful that you, instead of freaking out, because that was probably the first death that you had witnessed, you like had the sense to stay and like observe his, I mean, deeper to like a soul level versus just walking away and leaving him alone. So it's just so beautiful, Donna.
Yeah. No, it was very powerful. It was a very powerful moment.
So, do you think that you could maybe explain to people the difference between sympathy and empathy, or maybe even compassion, sympathy and empathy? Like, what would you consider the differences between those?
Oh, that's a great question, Lisa. So empathy, I see it as that you're able to acknowledge the other person's feelings. Like and if I've got these backwards, I apologize to people, but empathy is you're able to look at another person and say, I'm hearing what you're feeling, I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm right here supporting you with what you're feeling. I feel that empathy is a bit more powerful than sympathy, because sympathy, I feel is just that you, to put in a very general term, is that, oh, I feel bad for you, versus the empathy is more, I really want to understand how you're feeling and I want to be right there with you, versus feeling sorry for someone, which is how I kind of see the sympathy part. And I think that empathy probably leans a little bit more into compassion, because you need to be able to have compassion in the moment that you're with that person that needs to have that support. In saying that, there may be times that you're not ready to do that, or you're not in your own emotional state to kind of give that person that, and that's okay. I think that we all have times where, you know, we're all caught up with what's going on in our own head, that we're not able to do that. And that's okay to recognize that. I think that's the one thing that, you know, when I was going out to see my coworker, I just made sure that I was clear enough that I could just be there with her, that I tried to put all of my stuff that I, you know, was working on, whether it was work or my two kids or all that stuff, you kind of check that at the door, so you can be emotionally clear for that person so that you can, you know, just be there and hear what their story is.
Yeah. And this really speaks to leading with your heart. And when you said like not thinking about what you want to say next to the person, it's really just opening your heart, but then that hurts. Yeah. I think that hurts for people to feel what the other person is feeling and not take that on and have it affect their life as well. So maybe how have you done this for so long and still stayed so loving and not really put up those boundaries? Because I know that as a nurse, it must be hard where you have to like detach a little bit to be able to care for someone. So how have you been able to do that, to be able to care for people and still stay so open from your heart, Donna?
So I think one of the the lessons that I had to learn early on in my career was that when people are in crisis or they're dealing with something, a terrible diagnosis or a death of a loved one, there's a lot of emotion that comes out from people. And I had to really understand that, especially when you're a nurse in the hospital or you're an LNA in the hospital and you're providing a lot of direct care, sometimes the easiest avenue for either the patient or the family's kind of quick, you know, emotion sometimes gets directed towards you. And
sometimes, I would think a lot of times.
And you have to really step back and say, okay, this is really not about me. This is about what this person is going through. And being able to, you know, have another person you can kind of say, hey, I just got yelled at by, you know, this person, and that was really hard. I didn't like it. I know that they just found out that their wife is going to die very soon, you know, whatever the situation was. And have that other person say, yeah, I think that was really tough. I heard what happened. That was really tough. You handled it really well. And then you kind of just need to put that.
Okay. So you have a sounding board.
Yes.
In the other nurses who are going through the same thing. Yeah. Are doctors as available for things like that as well? The sounding board piece?
Yeah, they are. I think that when you're talking to the provider who's going to be seeing that patient and you're kind of giving them an update on what happened, they want to hear those little pieces so that they can kind of help, you know, tease out and let the patient or the family know, here's what the plan is going to be. This is what we're going to do, so that, you know, the family and the patient kind of hears the same story from the providers and the nurses too. So yeah, they're right there providing that support too.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And then what would you say that you do in your life to care for yourself? Because I would think, as a mom, as a nurse, as a wife, you want to keep yourself as healthy as possible physically, mentally, and emotionally. So maybe you can give people some ideas of what you do to keep yourself pretty high up, in terms of health, so that you can deal with everything that comes your way, because you are pretty solid.
Yeah. I think what I learned early on was that I needed to make sure that I had an outlet for emotions. So I like to walk. I like to walk in the woods. I like to snowshoe. So I make sure that I keep that as part of my week that I'm doing that. The other thing that I really like to do is I like to quilt, and I like to create and put things together. And I notice that if I take a break between my sewing, I can kind of see that sometimes I get these, I need to start it again, because for me, it's really an outlet where I can pick a pattern, put fabric together, create something. And most of the quilts that I make, I give to other people. So it's another outlet for me to feel like I'm kind of giving to somebody who might need a lift or might need, you know, kind of just a little bit of happiness. I'm not a perfect sewer. People know that, but it's more about the action of
the action, the time, and the love. Yeah.
I also like to, I journal as well. So I think that that can be very helpful. I actually have two separate journals. I have a journal where I write, you know, things down of, you know, like family time or what I did, but I also have what I kind of call the, it's kind of a bad journal where I feel that I can write all of my negative feelings and emotions and just write them down with a pen. No one's going to see this journal. When I fill this up, I'm going to burn it and get rid of it. But it's a way that I can write down all of the maybe not so happy thoughts in my head, and I can write them down, and it's a way to kind of get them on paper and process them and just get them out, no matter what the words are or maybe how ugly the thoughts are. But it's a way that I can kind of move those out of my brain so that I'm not, you know, they're not circulating in there. And nobody has to see that. And I'm going to throw it in the trash when it's all done, so that it's done forever, versus my other journal where I'm keeping track of, you know, events that happened or the trips we went on that I can kind of look back on later and see what I'm doing.
So your tools are like movement, so being outdoors, this activity-based, hobby-based way of creation, and then the writing it down and getting out. Yeah, I know for me this year, I feel a lot of like the sadness everywhere, and you can really just feel it. And so I find myself just like crying for no reason at all. Although I know it's like this feeling that's just really heavy on the earth right now. And I would rather just cry and like get out that emotion than have it kind of sit and stagnant and be like, ooh, I can't cry because it's a weakness, you know? So that's like my outlet, is getting things out that way. I've always been a crier.
It's been good. That's okay.
Yeah. Even after kids, it's gotten worse. Like I can't even watch commercials or movie, you know, but it's beautiful. I feel like it's beautiful to cry. I feel like the tears are very cleansing and purifying. You know, you feel them down the face. You kind of feel, I think it's better to feel than not feel and be numb. So your daughter is a nurse. So she's like the younger generation coming up here. So what advice have you given her, maybe differently than what you've given us today, on how to deal with patients and, you know, everything that's going on?
Sure. Yeah. She's, so she's an LNA and she works with the VNA, and we've actually recently been talking about it because she has shared that she's getting more hospice patients assigned to her and that she feels like she has a hard time with that. So I allow her to kind of share, like, you know, what happened or what are her fears, so that she can kind of share them. The one thing I stress with her is that when she goes into a patient's home, that there's a lot going on within that family. She shared one time where the family, where she's trying to maintain like her distance, she's got her mask on, she's got her eye protection on, she's trying to do the care for the patient, and the family was very insistent that she have something to drink. They just kept saying, you should have something to drink. You need to have something to drink. And she said, Mom, they just kept insisting. And I said, yes, because they want to do something. Their mom is dying, laying in the bed, and they can't do anything. So for them, the giving you the drink made them feel like they were doing something. So, and she's like, you know, she's like, okay, I get it. Like, it's that they really want to do something, but they
keep themselves busy.
Do what they want to do. They want to make their mom better, but they can't.
Yeah.
She did share with me that she had a difficult interaction with a husband whose wife was dying, and the husband, in rougher words, asked Rihanna just to leave. And so my daughter said, I really had a hard time with that. He was so angry with me. I tried really hard. And I said, this was not about you. This was really about, he's struggling to deal with the fact that his wife is dying. And I said, unfortunately, sometimes the healthcare workers get the brunt of people's emotion because they don't know where else to let it out.
Yeah, there's no one else there. Yeah.
And she and I said, it's not about you. It's not about that you did anything wrong. It's not about this. And I think that, and it's tough. It's tough to be able to stand there and kind of get people's raw emotions and realize it's not about you. You just happen to be there in a role in a situation where somebody is just really, really struggling. And I just encourage her to share that with, you know, her team so that the team knows, you know, maybe the husband needs some different checking in on or a different way or somebody who's not a nurse who's going to do something physically to the patient, but maybe, you know, a chaplain or something, somebody that he can just.
So was she scared that he was going to be abusive physically to her, or just the emotion?
I think it was more the emotion of, you know, just dealing with that kind of raw emotion.
And, you know, we don't get practice at raw emotion, right? We're all so trained to be perfected in how we treat other people. And there is no raw emotion anymore, which is more real and more of a connection than anything. That's the most real out of anything. Well, I mean, she's doing good things by trying and asking you and you being available to consult with her. Like, how awesome is it that she has her mom as the biggest consultant of all the interactions? Yeah, man, this is heavy stuff, huh?
It really is.
There's so much. So you hit the nail on the head, the collective grieving, people's pets, you know, these longtime loved pets of our houses are passing away and not able to handle, you know, what's going on, and we're stuck at home. So we want them there more. And
right. Yeah. And even funerals are no longer funerals. So that other.
Yeah. That aspect of like wanting to have that final piece that people have been used to forever. Like, I don't know when there wasn't a funeral unless it was like a war or something, you know, horrific like that, to not be able to, you know, lay your father down to rest or lay your friend down to rest. Yeah. I mean, even that gentleman, Dave, like I didn't even get to say bye. I said bye in my own way. And then he couldn't have visitors anymore and, know that he was taken care of on the other aspects, but
yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
Like you can't reach out to his family. You can't hug his family. Like all of that
is missing. It's a missing link.
It is. And I think it's hard. This is going to be tough. It's going to be tough to get over that for people.
Yeah. It will be I think like an evolution of growth that at least the whole planet is doing it together. It's not just one region, one geographical region in the history books. This is like the whole world. And I think that's what makes it slightly easier, is that everybody is going through it no matter what. I know that, you know, I've been teaching yoga long enough that I've had clients long enough that, you know, if one has like a cancer diagnosis or something tough in their lives, you know, my first reaction initially was anger. I was like angry that they had a cancer diagnosis and I wanted to try and fix it for them. And all I can do is just continuously daily share the tools that I know of and just keep doing my work of researching and continued learning to pass along whatever I learn that can help others. And I know that you continuously do that as well.
Yeah, I think that's all we can really do right now is just kind of keep that connection and keep going. Even if someone kind of maybe dismisses you at the beginning, just kind of keep reaching out in the ways that we can. That's the best we can do right now.
Donna, thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa.
I really appreciate you you doing this, because I know that you're on the shy side and really want to be immaculate with what you convey. So I just really thank you for taking the time out for the community and beyond that really could possibly benefit from this information.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa. This was nice to talk about.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening. I do hope that there was something out of here that was a good takeaway. 2020 has been a tough year for everyone. There have been losses abound with family, pets, and family members. And so we hope that something in this will give you the strength to carry through and help others with what you have learned through those losses and through this podcast. We're in this together, and know that I do love you all, and I try to support from afar. So if there is any information that you have that could help others, feel free to reach out. We love to, you know, spread the knowledge around and help as many people as we can. So I hope that you have the best day ever, and we'll talk soon. Bye-bye.